Okay, good evening, everybody. I'm Shannara Coyote, and this is the panel that is the Otherworld Contacts, Guides, Ancestors, Totems, and we have a nice circle here. I've been drafted into doing this at the very last minute. So this is going to be an experience for myself as well as for everybody here. Now, this is the panel. If you're in the panel, please come in and take a seat quietly. If you have any noisemakers, please silence them at once. If you have a noisemaker, please silence it at once.
Okay. Yes, it is.
If you are a panelist, would you please sit around here? Would you all please sit together so we know who you are? If you are a panelist. Because it makes it easier when we're passing the mics around.
I'm sitting next to you.
Okay, very cool.
I guess I'm being a panelist.
Okay. If you would like to be a panelist and you have not signed up to be a panelist, please raise your hand.
I don't know.
She can't remember if she signed up or not.
Okay. If you are a moderator of this panel, raise your hand. If you are a panelist of this panel, please raise your hand. Please come and join me. If you would like to be a panelist on this panel, raise your hand. The rest of you are all welcome to ask questions when we get to them. So, can we get started, please? Okay. As I said, I was drafted into this, so I'm pretty much winging it. But it sounds like a lot of fun, so I'm really looking to see how it's going to develop. Now, I will read the description. It's in the book. People can look at it just to refresh us. It's in Otherworld Contacts. Guides, angels, ancestors, totems. Are you a team player? Cultures around the world have traditions of working together with otherworld partners, such as spirits, guides, angels, or totems. Let's talk about different aspects of working with beings from the other side. That is the short description. I'm not really sure what the long description is. My own background, I'm a Wiccan High Priestess, I am a shamanic practitioner, and I've done a lot of work on both sides. My own experience is that very often we are talking about either the same thing or very, very similar things. We're just using different language, different containers, different, what do they call it, mindsets, worldviews, concepts, to describe what is essentially really the same thing. We're dealing with stuff in non-ordinary reality. We're dealing with intelligent beings in non-ordinary reality. They can be friends, they can be allies, they can be helpers, they can be teachers, they can be family, they can be lovers, they can be just about anything. They are beings who are not physically incarnated with whom we have a relationship with and who work with us or whom we work with in whatever ways to enhance our metaphysical work, whatever that may be. So I guess the best way to start is to just do very, very brief introductions. Who's on the panel, where are you coming from, what your background is, why you're here, and what you hope to accomplish by that. And I'd like to go clockwise, so let's start tonight.
Well, I'm Catherine Smith. I work in the fairy and inner temples traditions as expounded by R.J. Stewart. That covers a variety of different kinds of relationships, both partnership relationships with fairy and animal spirits and sort of more hierarchical relationships with deities. So we pretty much span the gamut there.
Thank you.
Don't push it.
I don't think so. It's working.
My name is Ellen Everett Hopman. I'm a druid. And my patroness is Bridget. But I don't really know who's working with me, but they definitely are. And weird things have been happening, which I'll tell you about.
And on that note, okay. My name is Morgan. I'm a druid in the Order of the White Oak. I also follow the fairy faith, and that's where a lot of my otherworldly contacts and work come in. And recently I've been doing a lot more with working with plant spirits, which I guess qualifies as somewhat otherworldly. So not sure if that'll come up here, but there you go. And the microphone's making me nervous, so.
Okay. That's cool, because the microphone made me nervous the first time I talked into it. After a while, relax, forget it's here. Pretend it's some sort of a magical apparatus that's connecting you to the other planes. Are you in the panel too? No? Okay. Should we start by defining our terms? What is, who are the fairy folk? Who are the people of the Shi? Who are the power animals? Who are the spirit guides? Who are the archangels? Who are the gods? Who are the goddesses? Who are the vetir, the spirits of the land? Who are the whatever? Anybody get some definitions they want to throw out? What are they and what aren't they? What are they not? And anything.
Why don't you tackle one at a time?
Anything else and anybody else I did
That's
not mention.
That's enough for an entire
okay.
volume of book right there. But
okay. Does it matter what we call them as long as we understand who they are and what they do and what they don't do? Tamar.
Butting in from the audience here. In the things that I have been told, not necessarily personally experienced, there is a sort of hierarchy of certain types of otherworldly entities. There's simple elemental beings that are attracted to attention and will do just about anything to get your attention. And then there are higher entities that manifest as spiritual teachers. Some of them manifest as higher archetypes or godlike beings. And I think there really is a hierarchy involved, at least in the level of sophistication and complexity and the ability to have independent concepts rather than depending on working through a human mind to be able to think at all, which is where some of the lower ones are.
That makes a tremendous amount of sense. So how do you structure for yourself? And I'm throwing it out to everybody. How do you structure for yourself who it is you're going to be working with, under what circumstances, using what boundaries or structures or protections or guidelines, or do they choose you? And how do you determine what it is that wants to work with you and if it's okay to work with you or not? If it's safe or it's comfortable. Willow?
Well, I have certain things that I do, and I guess the longer I do this, the more ritualistic I realize it is. Like, for example, at night I like to turn out all the lights in the house until there's nothing left except the candle that's burning in front of the statue of Bridget. So I don't have a hearth, so that's my hearth. So I pray to Bridget and in Gaelic or English, and always in Gaelic, actually. And then I thank her, and that's how I end my day. It's a ritualistic act. But there's something else that's acting in my life, and I don't know if it's her. I mean, as a druid, the way we work, we don't do so much magic per se. We try to have a personal relationship with a deity, and then we trust that since that deity is our kinfolk, they're related, you know, to us, and we're all family, that they're going to help us, you know, just like we help them by keeping their memory alive and celebrating their festivals and so on. But there's something else going on, and I don't know who it is. And there's two things that came up in my life, which I realize the gods have an incredible sense of humor. Like most people, I'm struggling financially. You know, we're in the middle of a depression, even though they're calling it a recession. We're actually in a depression right now. So, you know, a lot of us, you know, the two things that everybody prays for are love and money, right? Those are the two things. So for a long time, I'm going, you got to send me more money. If you want me to do this work, you got to send me more money. I know you want me to do this work, so come on. So they have a tremendous sense of humor, and I'm asking for large sums of money. So what happens? My aunt, who's in a nursing home, decides that I should have control of her money. I can't touch it. but it's in a bank account in my name. So I now have tremendous sums of money, and I'm not allowed to touch it. So that's one thing that I thought was kind of hilarious. And then the next thing is, oh, I have to travel. I have to go to Europe. I can't write another novel unless I go to Europe, because I need more stuff. I need more material. So what happens? This group in Spain, of all places, started writing to me about this conference in Spain. Okay, that's a little strange, but okay, Celt-Iberia, all right. So then at work, after 5 years of me trying to get tested in Spanish so that I could work bilingually, they just blew me off, and then out of the blue, they said, and this was during the week when we had no power, no water. You know, we just had that horrible blizzard, right? So they go, oh, we've decided we're going to test you in Spanish. And I'm like, what? And I was exhausted. I hadn't slept. I had no water. You know, I was a mess. And I took the test, and I passed it immediately. And the other people that I took the test with did not pass it. Okay, I passed. So it's like, and all of a sudden I'm working in Spanish and English, and it's exhausting. And then a friend of mine who knew about this conference in Spain, she goes, oh, well, it's obvious, isn't it? And I said, what? The gods are preparing you to go to Spain. You know, it's obvious. You know, like, so I don't, it's like, I can light my little candle and I can pray to Bridget in Gaelic, but I don't know what they have up their sleeve is basically, it's much bigger than anything I can imagine, because I'm just a human.
Getting back with the microphone again. This is Morgan talking again. I don't know if we're supposed to say our names. Getting back to definitions, when I look at the different spirits, I see from an animist perspective, I see every plant, every animal as having its own unique spirit. I also see, talking about the Vatir, the land Vatir, that different places will have their own sense of spirit. And then within the fairy faith, the concept of the fairy faith, I believe in otherworldly spirits that can interact with this world, especially in particular areas, places in the world. And I see them as different degrees of powers. Some of them are around the same level as like plant or animal spirits would be, and some of them are massively higher in power. And then sort of at the top of the scale for me is where the gods are. The gods are the highest powers, but that's sort of how I define the different things that are out there. Fairy itself is sort of a catch-all term for things that aren't obviously something else. I don't do work, I don't have experience with things like angels. Animal totems and animal spirits, I see as just, you know, spirits that are disincarnate, not attached to a physical body. So that's sort of how I define the different terms and things that we're talking about here, how I interact with them. Like we were talking, like you were mentioning with lighting your candle, mm-hmm. I make offerings to the gods. I make offerings to the Fae, to the land Vatir, and it's mostly to build that reciprocal relationship. I offer things to them so that they'll be in a friendly relationship with me. So that's sort of how I look at it.
My approach is fairly similar to that. I see, well, the fairy beings is a huge spectrum, from very small creatures to, you know, vast underworld powers that, like, they might as well be gods. They're kind of on the same, you know, level of the spectrum, but maybe not with organized temples and worshippers. The boundaries, you know, it's sort of like statistics. You can say, okay, over here is the fairy beings, and over here are the gods, and exactly where the line is fuzzy and moves, depending on who you're talking to. As a general rule, the way I would work with them is if I'm doing something where the fairy work seems appropriate, then I would go to sort of an otherworld version of the Crossroads and see who shows up to talk to me, because those are going to be beings that want to talk to me, want to work with me. You know, it's all about partnership. We all have to want to work with each other. So, you know, if something shows up and I kind of look at it and go, I don't like the way this feels, then I say no. That's, you know, just because something shows up there does not mean it's always going to be the right being for you to work with. It may be you need to say no if it doesn't feel right. Or maybe my first thought on what's going on with your life is, have you tried asking? Have you just said, hey, you know, who are you? What are you doing with my life? Maybe they'll answer. That might or might not be a good thing, but if it's something else, if I'm feeling a need to do something on a more godlike level, then, you know, I go to to a temple in the other world. And kind of by definition, what greets me there is going to be in that realm, because that's what's there. So it's not, as a rule, it's not a targeted specific thing. And once I've made that connection with something, then it may show up other places. You know, I may get a sudden impulse to, you know, you need to stop and pick up that piece of rubbish that's coming from one of those inner contacts. And why that particular piece of rubbish and not that one? I don't know, but it makes a difference to them. And, you know, your friend asks you, it's not, you can simply do them the favor and not worry about why. With gods, it's more like, okay, here I am, what do you need?
Here I am, what you need.
Yeah, exactly. You might choose.
For me, it's been a voyage of discovery, because the first otherworldly beings that I started to work with, of course, were the goddess and the god, and my personal experience as part of my high priestess training of learning to invoke and learning to draw down the moon. Also to call in the guardians of the four quarters. And this is all very traditional Wiccan, but even different Wiccan covens and different Wiccan traditions have different systems of who they're going to call in at each quarter. Some people call in elemental energies of each quarter. And the way they call them in is they summon, they start, they invoke, they call them in. Come here, do what I want you to do. Okay. And then afterwards, they banish them. Now, to me, that's always seemed to me extremely rude, okay? And I never do it that way. I don't work with elementals that don't really have any sense, because I'm really not interested in working with beings that don't have any sense. I don't want to have to script you, thank you very much. I don't want to have to control you, thank you very much. I would prefer to be in a mutually respectful relationship with the beings that I call in. So what I, for a while in a coven, okay, in the first coven, in the first coven I was trained in, and the coven I worked in for a long time, who we called in the Titans for the four quarters, the Titans being older than the gods, and we treated them with respect as was due. We called in different aspects of the goddess and the god. We had different names for them. We had different times we called them in. There were different things that they did. You might call in the goddess of the full moon at the full moon in the spring and summer. You might call in the goddess of the dark moon at the dark moon and in the fall and the winter. And there were different ways you related to them, or they related to you, and there were different things that they had that were in their province of things. This is what I take care of. And that seems to be fairly standard in, at least in my experience, in a polytheistic sort of a thing. So that's all very well and good. However, when I got into shamanic training, it got to be a little bit more complicated than that. because I found myself, what a shaman does or a shamanic practitioner does is journeys to the other worlds, however it is we conceive of the other worlds, and we form relationships with various archetypal spirits in the other worlds. Some of them we personify as teachers of one sort or another, spirit guides who may take human or humanoid forms. Others we personify as power animals who are the archetypal spirit of a particular animal and have various qualities of that animal. There are also the plant spirits that some people work with. And in shamanism, the Harnarians, and I call them Harnarians for a reason, it's a play on Gardnerian, and those people who have been around long enough will understand why I call Harnarians Harnarians. You can't be a shaman unless you do it our way. Well, you can't be a witch unless you do it our way, said the Gardnerians, so it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. I apologize if that sounded like dissing anybody's faith. Believe me, it was not what I was doing. What I said that for was basically to explain that in these two philosophies, which were earlier ones of their kind, they were fairly rigid and hierarchical as to who did what and where whom could be found and how you related to. Now, there are a lot of belief structures like Santeria and Vodun that are extremely structured, that you absolutely must, if you're dealing with one particular Loa or Orisha, you absolutely must do it XYZ way, or they're going to get really pissed off with you and they're going to blast you instead of giving you what you want. I find that it's much easier for me to work with a looser interpretation, just generally being respectful. And Harner says you go to the underworld, and that's where your power animals are, and you go to your upper world, your spirit world, and that's where your spirit guides are. That has not been my experience. My experience is I go to the other worlds. I find teachers who take on various forms. My spirit family is there. My spirit family includes teachers of one sort or another, includes beings, people who are really basically just like us, except they're not physically incarnated now. I don't know if they were, I don't know when they were, but they are part of my family that is not incarnated in this plane at this point in time. They are with me across the veils, they work with me, they do things with me, they protect me. Two of them are very tough ass-kicking guardians, and they will not let anything get through to hurt me, no matter where I go, which brings me to another topic, which is basically protection. Okay, but basically, when I call in, when I work with my family, with my beloveds, whoever they may be, whether they're the gods, the goddesses, or teachers, or family members, or power animals, or whoever, I call them all in. I say, I honor, invite, and welcome you. And when that's what I do. And afterwards, thank you for being here. Stay if you will, go if you must. Thank you. That seems to me to be respectful. So, does anybody have anything more that they would like to say? Questions from the audience, comments from the other panelists, anything about anything anybody has said up to now?
I actually have one question.
Yes, please.
Thank you. When you were at the very first kind of introducing the topic of the panel, all of the adjectives you used for beings in the other world were positive. Mm-hmm. Do you find that there are more adversarial beings in the other world? And how does each panelist in their own tradition look at that question?
Thank you. I think that's an absolutely brilliant question. It's Shannara again, and it needs to be said, and it definitely needs to be addressed. And is there any panelist who has a burning desire to go first with an answer to this? Oh, Tam, okay, Tamor, yes, and after I'd also like to call on Larry Oberon to say something about this because he's an expert in that sort of thing. So, hi, Tamor.
Hi. There's a mental exercise that my meditation group, long-term, heavy, intensive meditation, has worked with, which we call brain mapping. It involves stimulating various areas of the brain energetically and then opening to see what comes in. And one area fairly routinely has produced contact with something that we have mostly identified as neutral, if you go there, know what you're doing. And there appear to be intelligent entities there that are non-human who are not negative, but they're not necessarily positive. They're just like walking into a tough neighborhood. You better know what you're doing.
Okay, if anyone here has ever studied psychosynthesis, anybody know what I'm talking about? Kirk, of course. Well, psychosynthesis shows that every human is walking around with multiple personalities. We all have that. We have the strong person, the weak person, the scared person, the creative person, the angry person. We all have that. It's just a question of how much control we give to each voice. And some people give all their control to the chaotic person, and some people give all their control to the nice person. And, you know, anyway, but that I'm just trying to put it in a nutshell. But if I find myself in a position where I'm frightened, where I think there's something not nice around, then I call on the strong spirit. And it might be, I don't know, I honestly don't know, because the longer I work with this and the older I get, the more I don't know seems to be appropriate. So I don't know if that strong spirit is one of my sub-personalities that I'm carrying around on the soul level, or if it is one of the strong spirits that protects me, that guides me, that is nameless because I don't know its name. But that's what I do, is I try to shift the energy. So if I'm afraid or feeling overpowered or overwhelmed, then I try to shift it so that the strong spirit, whatever it is, that guides me, the positive strong spirit, is the one in charge. I just try to move it to that. And I can't name it. I mean, it could be Bridget. It could be a tree, because I work with trees a lot. You know, you can call on Rowan, the spirit of the Rowan tree. You know, there's things you can do, but you just move it to the strong, positive spirit. That's what I do.
Morgan, again. If the question is, like, do I believe that there are negative spirits out there? Yes. I believe that there's entities in the spirit world, that there's fairy beings, if you want to call it that, energetic beings that are not out for our best interests. From a fairy faith perspective, traditional fairy faith, I believe that there's ones that, you know, would like to hurt us if they can. If you look at a lot of the Irish and Scottish mythology, they fully believe that there's ones that like to eat us, like little appetizers, because we're crunchy and good with ketchup, like the bumper sticker says. So, you know, I do believe that there are things out there that we do need to be careful around, that we have to have protection around, and that in some cases we just need to not go around. Sometimes avoiding the big hungry grizzly bear is really the best thing to do, as opposed to poking it with a stick. Just saying. So that's sort of my view on it.
Where do you want to go next, or would you rather go? You've been drafted.
What was the question?
Okay, basically,
the question was, are there entities in the world that you believe to be more adversarial, and what do you do in your own spiritual practice to protect yourself or to choose to or not choose to work with them?
In a short answer, yes, there are adversarial spirits out there. What do I do to protect myself? If I can't run and hide, I do my best to placate them. excuse me. It's really kind of hard and vague to discuss whether or not things are adversarial. There are things out there that don't understand us and that we don't understand. And as such, men have, as a group, humans being men, have a fear of things that they don't understand, and they try to compartmentalize things. And if you try to compartmentalize a spirit, it may get angry with you and decide that it's best interest to make you something that doesn't bother it, so it will become adversarial. my best way of placating spirits is to approach them with respect and caution until I know what their intent towards me is. And, you know, they're 9 times out of 10, you can avoid confrontation but it's by saying, "Hi, I'm this person. Who are you?" Does that answer your question? Okay.
Okay, do you have anything you'd like to add on that, Catherine?
Well, my approach is that I'm starting with that initial contact-making phase in an area that is basically known to be safe. The beings that come there are generally well-intended toward people and want to work with people as opposed to the crunchy and good with ketchup approach. So if you make the initial connection there, it's reasonably safe. I say reasonably because these aren't humans. They have a different perspective. They think about things a little differently. So they may think something is perfectly okay, and for them it would be. It might not be so good for you. So you can't just turn your brain off. You know, any more than if, say, my friend Rob there said, "Hey, let's all buy dirigibles and go to Pennsylvania."
Wow, you just got zinged.
You know?
No, that's word for
he
word
said
quote.
It. And we apply our reality filter and laugh and say, "No, that really wouldn't be a practical idea. Let's drive instead." You know. And at the same time, sometimes you ask them for things that aren't good either. You know. And so it pays to listen. If you say, "Let's do X" to your fairy contact, and they say, "Are you sure you want to do that?" That's a really good sign to stop and say, "Okay, maybe not. Let's talk."
I need to just say something.
Please, yes.
I think the fairies want me to say this. The fairies want me to remind you that humans, they don't understand humans, and that we don't always act in their best interest. And they are really confused. Because on the one hand, we say, "We love you, we love you, we love you," when we put out cakes and cookies for you on our fairy altar. And on the other hand, we're destroying the earth, which is their home. So they don't get it.
Thank you. What I like to add to that is, first of all, I think a lot of this has to do a lot. For me, there's where is the absolute of how are things really, are they as we perceive them? How much of it is what are we perceiving? And in other words, human perception of what and whom may be in the other worlds and how we expect them to act or react. How much of that is our collective unconscious putting labels and definitions and building up energy and expectations over the centuries, over the millennia, as to what is out there and how does it behave, and how much of it actually is otherworldly beings and how they are, and where is the intersection of the two overlapping circles between our perception of what's there and what's really there. And for me, that is many, many millennia of discovery. If you have, and just to put an analogy in, for lack of a better term, assuming you have an analogy of somebody, a person that you meet for the first time, and I have to think in human terms because I'm a human being, a person, just any one of us, how would you behave if somebody greeted you pleasantly and treated you with courtesy, as opposed to somebody who just behaved like a complete idiot around you and treated you perhaps with the best of intentions, but just in a completely stupid manner, discourteous manner? Would you not behave differently depending on how you were approached and how you were greeted?
Well, that's a very good point. I'm in the school of these are real beings, they have a real essence, they're not reflections of us or psychological figments. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think a lot of them are willing to say, "Okay, well, if this is what you're expecting, then, you know, I'll show you that face. I'm helpful and cooperative. And sometimes it's worth saying, okay, is what I'm seeing here what you really look like, or is this what you think I want to see? And sometimes they just have a sense of humor. I've gotten meditations where we had Disney-esque dwarfs making snow out of pillowcases full of feathers for weather spirits. And we finished it, and we had this long silence when everybody was going to talk about what they'd picked up. And somebody finally broke the ice, and we discovered that we had all gotten these bizarre images, and they were apparently just having fun with us that day.
Okay, well, I'm also in the school of thought that they are actual beings separate from us. I think any type of perception of them is really complicated by the fact that, you know, they are historically known for glamour, for illusion, and for presenting themselves as they want to be perceived. So trying to sort through, you know, what is the reality there, unless you happen to be someone who has, you know, what the Irish call second sight, the ability to see them and to see them as they actually are, you're pretty much always going to be sort of at the mercy of what they want you to perceive. And you can, you know, as Catherine said, you can always ask them, can I see you as you are? But I think that that's where some of the complication comes in, because if they know that you're expecting something particular, then by all means they can give you what you're expecting. On the other hand, if they're in a mood and feeling playful, then you can get, apparently, Disney dwarves with pillowcases. You know, so there's a lot of flexibility with that. But I do certainly think that they exist separate from us. I don't think that they are something that human beings created, or a projection of us or of our own minds, which is my viewpoint. I know that there's many people who do feel that is the case. So that's just my view on it.
Okay, thank you. And to me, that absolutely begs the question, who are you talking about now? Are you talking specifically about the fair folk? Are you talking about the gods, the goddesses? If so, of which culture? Because it differs. Of demigods, demigoddesses, of orishas, of ancestral spirits, of spirits of the land, of power animals, of spirit guides and teachers. Who are you talking about when you say they?
That's so broad.
Yeah, that's unbelievably broad. Yeah, well, it's just, I think it's important to form your own relationship. I mean, you can't have a relationship with every single Orisha, every single Loa, every single Celtic deity, every single Egyptian deity. You just can't. So it's important to tune into what you're drawn to. I, for example, have never been drawn to the Greek gods and goddesses. They just don't appeal to me. No offense. But they don't. I mean, when I was a child, I read their stories. Didn't register. The Celtic stuff, on the other hand, gets me every time, you know. So, and I also have a very strong relationship with trees. I teach people how to do this. I do it myself. I have the ability to bond with trees, hang out with trees, get messages from trees, get information from trees, inspiration from trees, healing from trees. It's just what I do. And as I said before, Bridget, you know, is my patroness, and I can turn to her. And of course, the Earth Mother is big. Occasionally, Lou. Shouldn't forget him. But I wouldn't presume to try to have a relationship with you know, hundreds of things. It just wouldn't make sense to me. It's a, to me, as a druid, it's a family relationship. There are certain things that I'm very close to. And then I do have a fairy altar in the backyard, and I do call them in. I call in the Brunies and the, you know, the Lainan Shi and the Leprechaun and the Cluricon and everybody that I can think of. And I have to be careful because they'll come in here and they'll wreak havoc with the place. But, and I give them food and stuff. But I do the same ones year after year after year. They're my family.
Back with the microphone. I think, you know, certainly when it comes to deity, I wouldn't presume to even guess. I think that they certainly are known to present themselves consistently in the same way. The deities that I work with, I consistently perceive in the same way. Whether that's actually their true form in any way, I would not ever be so bold as to ask. So, you know, it's good and it works, and that's good enough for me. When it comes to the good neighbors, they were more the ones I was referring to with the they. Mm-hmm. They can control.
What is a good neighbor?
The fair folk.
The folk.
The
fair folk.
Mother's blessings.
Okay.
Yeah, people of the hills, mother's blessing. There's a lot of euphemisms for them. Yes, it used to be considered very
rude.
Yeah, rude, impolite, not the best luck to call them by a more direct name. So there's a lot of euphemisms. Good neighbors is one. Yeah, no problem. They're the ones who can appear really however they feel like appearing. In my experience, when it comes to more like the Landvatir, the land spirits, plant spirits, tree spirits, they're much more direct. And I think that they appear as they are. And I don't know if that's just that's because it's in their nature, no pun intended, to appear as they are. They just don't have any artifice in them, or that they just don't bother to appear different than they are. But that's my experience with it, so.
Thank you.
Well, my first thought when you asked your question was, yes. What she said really, I think, applies to all of the things on your list. I certainly don't have dealings with all of those things. When I'm dealing with deities, I work primarily with a dark underworld goddess who is a very primal figure and doesn't have a specific cultural association. Although she certainly has relationships with some of the cultural dark goddesses like Hecate or Kali. And that's a steady thing for me. The fairy beings come and go depending on what's going on in my life and their lives. You know, we'll work with one for a while and then they will move on, or I'll move on to something else. And, you know, the relationships change just as you have close friends, you know, in college and you lose touch with them and move on. So that's. I think we have a question here.
Ill intent? That's the question.
Well, that's a whole other panel. That's on Sunday. But
yes,
dark aspects, they're calling it. I would not ill intent in the sense of I want to hurt you because it's fun to hurt you. But they're more about destruction and regeneration. Sometimes you just need to get rid of stuff so you can have new things. And that's not a comfortable phase of the cycle for a lot of people. So it may not be something that you want to go anywhere near personally, but it's a part of the cycle. It's not evil per se, just, as I say, not always fun.
I also work with the dark aspects of the goddess a great deal, and in fact, I related a lot to the archetypal dark goddess before Brige came to me some years ago and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You've been dealing with my sister, I want equal time." And so, okay, absolutely, yes, my lady. And a question I would throw out is, what is evil? Is the sun good or evil? Well, that depends on how close we are to it and how much we've absorbed from it. When we are dealing with otherworldly entities, and Tamar was absolutely wonderful, and she did this terrific chart on the wall at the top. Tamar, perhaps you'd like to break that down in a few moments, but basically it's a matter of perspective. We have to understand that when we're dealing with otherworldly beings, they think differently than we do. They are dealing in terms of aeons. We're dealing just in terms of a very short mortal lifespan. And it's perspective. Nature is natural. And at what point in the cycle are you dealing with whoever you are dealing with, and what are their priorities? Tamar, would you like to explain what you wrote on the board?
Okay, that's a very simplified diagram. Starting at the very basic level, you have elementals. They're little energy consciousnesses that are pretty dumb, basically. If you feed them attention, they can develop and apparently become more intelligent. Sometimes if lots of people feed them for a long time, they can become independently active and intelligent, at which point they may graduate to become dumb fairy folk and eventually become smarter fairy folk. That this is, okay, it's an intellectually based description I'm using, but that's the way I think. But they can become bigger or smaller, depending on how much energy they have acquired and attracted. The fairy folk I consider to be not quite up on the level as goddesses and gods. They can wane and fade again. Goddesses and gods are usually more specific, but there are certain groups that can be collected together. I've left out a whole layer there. Like you have the maker gods. There's Thor, there's Thoth down in Egypt. There are different flavors, but they both make things. There's Hephaestus in Greek. He's a little more like Thor, but not much. He's got his own flavor. They might work together, be subsumed together on another level as manifestations of a generalized maker god, which would be a manifestation of a more generalized masculine energy god. And on the other side of that, you would have the feminine equivalents or similarities. So you would have Freya and Athena would both be manifestations of the feminine, but not necessarily the same flavor of the feminine, because Freya would be more the mother and Athena would be more the maiden. But ultimately, on a much higher level, they would be the archetype of the feminine. And then you get beyond the void, and you get up into where there's just pure essence rather than anything that we would recognize as taking a human form, unless it chooses to manifest as a human form. You do get the occasional higher energy manifesting in a form that we can perceive as a lower form, where you get Buddhas and Bodhisattvas theoretically coming down and sometimes behaving as balls, because the person they're interacting with needs to interact with somebody like that for a moment. You can't always define what you're interacting with by your perception of it, because it may be there for a much higher reason.
Absolutely, and that's a very excellent point. And there are a couple of categories of otherworldly beings that I am wondering where they fit into Tamar's list. One is the archangels, the angels and the archangels, whom I do not work with personally, but people who are into ceremonial magic very often do. And another is the class of otherworldly beings who I'd say I do the most with. And that, I don't know, once again, your label may vary. You could call them ancestral spirits. You could call them, for me, I believe they are people. Okay, they're people just like us, except they're not physically incarnate at this point in time. How many incarnations they've had, on what planes, I don't know. My understanding is that they are not the fairy folk. However, when a medium was reading for me just a couple of weeks ago, she said, "Oh, you have so many incredible loving beings around you, archangels, fairy folk, animals. And meanwhile, my folks are all laughing that she perceived them as archangels and she could perceive them as fairy folk, because that's not how I perceive them. So it was back again. The message I was getting is we can appear to the beholder as through the framework of their perceptions, however it is.
In Scottish tradition, the fairies are angels who fell to earth and then fell into the earth. The she are the angels. There's no difference. They just happen to be earth angels who live under the soil.
Yeah, there's some who believe that they're the angels that wouldn't choose a side when the angels fought in heaven, which is one of the ways they ended up not up there or down in the bad place. And there's many, many people in both Irish and Scottish that do believe that the dead, some of the dead, end up in the other world with the fairies. Mm-hmm. So there's a very blurry, speaking of blurry lines, it's a very blurry line sometimes between the ancestral dead and the fairies. In Norse belief, you have the Disir and the Alfar. And there is some belief with the Alfar, especially in modern heathenry, that the male ancestral dead who stay on in a protective way become the Alfar. Become some of the Alfar, and then the DCR protective female ancestral dead. So I think the line between the dead and protective spirits and fairies, just, I'm not even sure there is a line. You know, I'm sure there's some kind of, you know, difference, but, you know, kind of like you were saying, the older you get, the more you say you don't know. And that's one of those where I'm just like, I have no idea. As long as they're happy and it's good.
In Celtic tradition and in Indo-European tradition in general, the way to access the ancestors and the she, or the fairy, or the good folk, the neighbors, is through water. It's exactly the same, because water takes things down to the underworld. Mm-hmm. So they're all in the same place. Mm-hmm. It's the same realm.
And in the shamanic tradition, that's the way we access what Harner and I think Valaldo, who was my teacher's teacher to a point, call the underworld, is we go through a body of water in the ground, through a lake or river or a hole in the ground, we go that way. Or if we're accessing other parts, we might climb the world tree and go up through the membrane, and whatever it is, it's the other worlds. And there is one more. So I agree with you, the boundaries are very blurry, and it has a lot to do with your perception. And I love what you had to say about the Scottish tradition, about the ancestors and on the dead and the fairy folk, and there being just so much overlap with them, because it helps clarify things. Now, the protective part, as to a lot of things out there are not exactly the kind of people you'd want to hang out with or the kind of beings you'd want to hang out with. How do you keep away from them? Everybody might have a different answer to this, and we have about 7 minutes maybe, so I'd like to touch on that. I'd like everybody to touch on that if they want to, and also if there's anything else that anybody has a burning desire to be talking about. For me, I love this analogy. If you went on this plane, okay, if you went into on this plane, how would you determine what kind of people you meet you would like to develop a relationship of any kind with? What does your intuition tell you? What are your sensors tell you? How do you feel about the guy or the gal who you meet in the bar or in the supermarket or in the library or in your college class or on the subway? What kind of vibes do you get from them? Are there anybody that you want to talk with? Are there anybody you want to get to know any better? If so, yes, by all means, please do with caution. If not, nope, thank you, I'm sorry, but have a good day. It seems to me that to a certain point that analogy can cross over into the other worlds as to how we determine who we're comfortable working with. And there, different traditions have all sorts of way. Okay, how do you know that the spirit is really of the light? You ask it in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. If you happen to be a Christian, Ted, do you come from the light? And they're supposed to answer you honestly. Will they? I don't know. I think it depends on who you're working with. I have also heard it said, if you are stronger than the other world entity, they have to tell you the truth. If you're not stronger than the other world entity, they can tell you anything that you want. I don't know. There are just so many different ways. I say use your instincts and use your intuition and use your judgment. Don't go out into the other worlds under the influence of anything, any chemical, unless you have done it with proper ritual and proper safeguard. Always create sacred space. Call in your existing protectors before you're going to go journeying out there. And use common sense and use caution. And that's what generally works for me. And generally, over the decades, and I've built up relationships with beings, I have at least two guardians in my own personal family on the other side who will absolutely not let anything get through to kick ass. So the worst I have to deal with is coyote mischief. We have coyotes, and they can be mischievous. They're not malicious, but they are mischievous. We can deal with it. We need a little bit of leaven, because nature abhors a vacuum. If everything were good and wonderful and dull, that would open the doors to real yicky stiff coming in. So we let the coyotes have their fun, we let them pilfer things, we let them do a little bit of naughtiness in a very small way, because that gives the necessary element that not everything is perfect. Okay, who else would like to sum this up, or go wherever we need to go for the last 5 minutes?
Well, I think you did a pretty good job. I don't have a lot to add to that.
Okay, thank you.
It's very important to make offerings to the spirits where you live. And in Scottish tradition, it's always the first Monday after a fire festival. For the long time, I couldn't figure that out. Why a Monday after a fire festival? That's Imbolc, Beltane, Lunasa, Samhain. And I thought about it, and I thought about it for about 20 years. And it takes me a long time. It finally dawned on me that in the old days, people followed the herds. So at Samhain, you know, you followed the cows back down the mountain. At Bealtaine, you followed the cows back up into the hills. At Imbolc, it had something to do with the sheep. And then at Lunasa, you had to go out to harvest grain. So I think what that's saying is those are the four quarters of the year, and you're moving into a different time, a different space, and literally it used to be a different area of your territory. So when you move into that new territory, the first thing you do, because it's only polite, is you make an offering to the spirits, to the fairies, to the ancestors. So that's just what I would ask everyone to just remember to do that. If you have a garden, do it in the garden. If you have a house, do it in the house. And form your own personal relationship with them. Is what I would say.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, the key with any of this is if you want to start working with otherworldly contacts, whatever they are for you, whether it's the fair folk, whether it's angels, whether it's your ancestors, is be consistent. Once you start doing it, find a schedule that works for you, whether it's, you know, once every 3 months make an offering, whether it's once a month, once a week, but find a schedule that works and then stick to it, commit to it. Because I think, you know, one of the biggest problems, speaking of things that probably annoy the fairies, is people who get very enthusiastic and decide they're going to do it for like a couple weeks while it's new and fun, and then get bored with it and stop. And I think that's true of any otherworldly contact, is that, you know, people will get very gung-ho into it for a little while and then move on to something else. You know, so if you commit to doing it, if you're really interested in nurturing these contacts and these relationships, you know, understand it's like a friendship. You're not going to maintain a friendship with anybody if you only call them, you know, when you're bored, you have nothing better to do, or you really need something. You know, you have to make a point of putting the energy into it to make it a good, solid relationship. And I'm getting off my soapbox now. So.
Okay. excellent points. And just to add one point about offerings, it's not necessarily something tangible about putting out pancakes and pouring milk. It could be an offering of energy. It could be incense. It could be just saying thank you every day and I love you. Whatever. Okay. So we're about out of time. Tamor, one last thing. Yeah.
One last thing. If you are going to seriously work, as was said, with a particular type of energy entity, it takes practice. You have to get your own head straight so your own glitches don't get into the way, and you have to work at it fairly gently. It's like weightlifting. You have to be able to handle that energy. And if you jump into it and happen to be lucky or unlucky enough to be able to make a really strong connection when you're not ready, it's like that 500-pound weight has just landed on you. And it didn't mean to hurt you. You're the one who got onto it and let loose the catch. You have to practice and get used to it. I have known people to get totally fried by contact with a very high spiritual energy just because they weren't able to handle it. They didn't practice. The other people that had practiced could handle it easily and use it all the time.
That is an excellent point. Okay, the panel itself is officially over, so anybody who has another class to get to, by all means, feel free. But